Chapter 24, June 2057. As soon as she got out of the packed plane at New Diaspora and made it into town on a crowded open bus, Tash started to suspect that if it hadn't been for the moon suit green jackets the in-jokes had each promised to wear, she wouldn't have a chance of finding Mel or she. And the secessionist capital's big 1957 themed summer party would have had to go ahead without their meeting. They decided on this meetup in the relatively happy wake of Jones's California meeting, herself, Mel, and she, a drunken moment for Tash and Mel, less so for she, who was already in astronaut training. The venue was she's idea, surprisingly. Something about it attracting him particularly. Well, it had seemed like a good idea at the time. Tash thought now, a way to keep in touch. But the journey in had been bad enough, the transport links, inadequate for this new city, even without the festival, usually packed. And now she was here. A big, open sky, blue with a few streaks of high cloud, the sun high. A beautiful, harmless sky, for once. And without any of the clutter of a big, old city like Newcastle to obscure the view. She longed to stay on the bus, hide under a seat even. The sky had seemed harmless on the 5th of January. She looked down at the security of the ground, took deep breaths, focused on the day to come. Which way to go from here? They decided to meet under the big statue of a kneeling Elvis Presley that had been set up at the centre of the park, the kilometre-wide green sward that dominated the heart of this great bowl of a city. Indeed, right on the very spot that Elvis, resting comfortably on one knee, chin resting on fist, striking a pose, seemed to be staring down at in the images boosting the festival. The problem was, everybody else seemed to have had the same idea, and even, from the approaching bus, Tash could see it was a mob scene. She shrank back from that too. What made it worse yet was that she kept losing her phone signal. No service. She knew this was a global problem, arising from the increasingly tattered post-blink state of the world's infrastructure. No service. She suspected that for generations like hers who had grown up in an interconnected world with effectively infinite bandwidth, it was like the voice of Galaxius itself, goading humanity one by one. No service. No service. They had all been too busy to think it through properly, to give 1957 Day the reflection it deserved. Tash had vaguely assumed that Diaspora's biggest public event since the blink was going to be a big hit. A day of escape from the pressures of the age, as its organisers evidently intended. But she had also assumed that most people would join in remotely via feeds, rather than in person, despite the connection problems. That was how events went nowadays, wasn't it? Maybe not since the blink, despite the subsequent travel problems. Not today, anyhow. People still wanted to get together, it seemed. They wanted to be here, in a crowd of their fellow humans. So, doggedly, Tash climbed out of the bus and made her way through the crush, heading vaguely towards Elvis. Collisions were frequent. At least most of the bumps and barges were unintentional, and softened by the layers of clothing everybody was wearing. Summer solstice it might be officially, here in the Northern Hemisphere, but it felt a lot colder. More like an early English spring day, Tash thought. But given the drift of the calendar, the term summer solstice had no meaning anymore. It was an ordeal. Tash led most of her life indoors now, in regulated, secure environments. She found herself shrinking back from the human chaos. Then Tash caught a flash of the lurid green she was looking for, off in the distance. Mel or she? It had to be. No, Mel. Her strawberry blonde hair, brilliant in the sunlight, was unmistakable. Tash jumped and waved, dressed in the same green. Mel spotted her, waved back, and they started to make their way towards each other. When they finally met, they embraced, looked each other up and down, and laughed. Then they linked arms and pushed on through the crowd, aimless at first, just heading away from the central knot around Elvis. Their green coats drew stares. "Shit," Mel said. "I know these things were my idea. I kept trying to persuade Jane to come over with me, you know, but the coats were the final straw for an 11-year-old. She fingered her own lapel. This is the nearest thing I could find to that ugly lunar green. Well, the idea was to stand out in a crowd, but wow, yours is even worse. Have to admit it wasn't my choice, Tash admitted. Didn't have the time. Grace Butterworth found me something in the end. Remember her? She travelled with me and Fred Bowles to Hawaii when... I remember. Tough character. With the niece in Naples. We've all been so damn busy in-house. Since the hypercane, I don't get much chance to follow the news. Well, the aftermath of the storm is still unravelling. You know that in the end we had to evacuate whole cities from the western coasts, Greater Liverpool, New Bristol. Brand new cities built only decades ago to accommodate populations fleeing from the climate collapse, sea level rise, now overwhelmed in their turn. The Irish mainland got it worse. I know, Mel said. It's that way all around the Atlantic periphery, isn't it? It's difficult to get any sleep, let alone to get any clothes shopping done. Tash hesitated. She made no promises about wearing moon green, you know, or even about showing up, even though coming here was his idea. Oh, he'll be here. Reminds me, I did get a fresh message last time my phone worked. Forget Elvis. Now we're supposed to meet him near something he called the Slave Market Exhibit. Mel glanced at a phone map, retrieved from memory, Tash saw, and looked around. Over that hill. Although I don't know why the crowd should be more sparse there than anywhere else. All these collisions, this Brownian motion stuff, are wearing me out. She eyed Tash. You more so, I think, correct? Tash tried to tough it out, then gave in. It's just the people, Mel, and that big open sky. Mel squeezed her hand. The sky, I know. Do you ever follow the medical analyses? It's all about the blink. And where were you on the day? How you experienced it? When it happened, I mean, the loss of the sun. If it was the middle of the night, well, you woke up to a missing dawn. If you were indoors, something funny about the light outside the window. But if you were caught outside in the daylight, pow! Lights out. With just a little afterglow from the corona. It was visceral, shocking, totally disorienting. As if a chunk of your reality had come loose. To the extent that people have acquired mild phobias about being outdoors. People like you. It's a recognised syndrome. We're all affected by the blink and how we experienced it. Tash had heard of this. The syndrome had been recognised even on the day. Maybe. It seems pretty weak. Not at all. It doesn't seem to have affected you. Mel rubbed her nose. Well, I was studying the sky. Not outdoors, contained in a bubble on that dumb airship. It was already an unusual morning because of the eclipse. It was shocking, but, well, with Charlie's help, I think I was sciencing it pretty quickly. A family, a couple of kids came by, and Tash couldn't help but flinch. Mel smiled. And here are all these people. We all got phobic about crowds long before Blink Day because of all the pandemics, right? You're not alone in that. Come on. Maybe it will be easier away from the centre. So they linked arms again and walked, following a path leading to the foot of that hill. So how is your dad? Mel asked. Tash was feeling vaguely ashamed and was glad of a change of subject. Like everybody else, I guess. Wishing it would all go away. Safe enough, though. I think he's glad to have me close by. I bet he is. Jane's lucky if I fly through the stratosphere overhead once or twice a month. Now they were climbing the hill, both soon panting, and the conversation faltered. Tash glanced back as the view opened up of Elvis and the smart wood tower of Council Hall that loomed behind him and the sprawl of greenhouses on the hillsides beyond. In fact, the greenhouses were new, an improvisation in the face of the mixed-up climate. An attempt to keep agriculture going in this cold blink summer. Tash knew something of the story of this new city of diaspora. Back in the 2040s, the council hall, or a predecessor structure, hastily thrown up, had become a seat of government as a new polity had evolved from what had been a vast refugee camp, sheltering the climate displaced from New York State and other eastern regions. That had been the beginning of the secession, as the states harder hit by the climate collapse had begun to look to their own affairs, independently of the federal government, and then to link together in a new alliance, a different federation. From a food riot to nationhood, Tash had heard it sourly described by one diplomat, an envoy of the rump United States. Now, even this far inland, the hall itself had been visibly battered by the hypercane's winds and rain. Although restoration work was underway, as Tash could see, great sheets of smart plastic wrapping swathes of the building like bandages. And, spreading over the hills beyond, tent cities. In this new polity, there had been barely time for a single generation to come of age, Tash reflected, before the fresh calamity of the blink had forced further migrations as, back in the east, stretches of states once safely inland were being abandoned altogether. Ironic, she said. As she walked on, Mel produced small bottles of water from deep pockets in her green coat, passed one to Tash. What is? Look at all this. A world that has just coped with one decade's long trauma in the climate adjustments. Now hit with another. Mel sipped water. Actually, Charlie Marlowe argues that it's no coincidence. It's probably because we just became powerful enough to do stuff like adjust a planet's climate, even if by accident, that Galaxias has shown up right now. Pioneer 10 was a kind of proxy of our capabilities. Unacceptable capabilities, from its point of view, it seems. She seems to be tiring quickly. Tash took her hand as they walked on, more slowly. You okay?
Yeah.
Just out of condition. We travel all the time, you know? Or Charlie does. Conferences and ministerial briefings all over the world, as everybody runs around trying to get a handle on things. Travelling, immobile in one seat or couch or office chair after another. But you do need to be face-to-face if you're talking to the Fizz Security General. And where Charlie Marlowe goes, I have to go. That's good, isn't it? To be valued?
Yes, Mel admitted.
It feels good to be doing something. Even if it is just giving repetitive briefings and fending off dumb questions over and over. Charlie complains about the lack of time she has to do any actual thinking. But 10% of her time is probably more productive than 100% of most people's. So I travel all the time, but I never walk anywhere, she smiled. I do my yoga moves like we did at college, in hotel rooms, every morning, every night, 3 sun salutes. If not for that, I'd be as stiff as a board. For me, it's 24-hour stays in-house. At least you're seeing the world.
Ha, conference room by conference room.
They stepped back to let a group pass, densely packed, adults and children alike. They were singing some kind of hymn and carried crucifixes and palm leaves, they looked like, brandished in the air, and they all wore pale blue T-shirts emblazoned with a slogan, Puny Yahweh. Tash and Mel exchanged a glance. Bloody Charlie, Mel murmured. Every time Tash was confronted with religious explanations for the blink, she would hear the damn phrase of Charlie Marlowe's. They pushed on. The hill got steeper yet. This was the Appalachians after all. Let's keep pushing it, Tash said. At least we'll warm up. Some midsummer day this is. Mel smiled ruefully, panting harder. Only midsummer by the calendar now, my friend. The old calendar, I mean. And not that we have a new calendar yet, but we're already feeling the effects of Earth's new orbit. Right. Our whole year is stretched out by about 20 days overall. The calendar has already slipped by 6 days since Blink Day, we think. So the next winter solstice is going to be 10th of January next year, drifted from the 21st of December and so on. Our whole calendar is going to drift and shift, and we will have to figure that out, she smiled. We do bullshit a lot about this, travelling. What about birthdays? Isn't Elvis here because of a birthday? His 100th, maybe? Not quite,
Tash said. I looked it up. Mel smiled. You always were the nerdy one who'd do that. Apparently it's 100 years since he became truly famous, appearing on something called the Ed Sullivan Show, online or maybe on television back then. Still, it makes you think. Will you celebrate your birthday by the old calendar or the new? The crowd of people around them was thinning as they climbed, and now Tash saw they were approaching the brow of the hill, probably to Mel's relief. Then there's all the religious festivals, Mel said, puffing. The Pope is already consulting with the astronomers about Easter. That's set by the church's rules to be on the Sunday following the first full moon on or after the spring equinox. As an algorithm, that still works, even if the dates of the equinoxes and full moons are going to be different now. I think they call it the computus. Then there's Ramadan, Rosh Hashanah. The religions and traditions will just have to find their own ways to adjust. And as for the Chinese New Year, my ears are burning. Here came she, as if out of nowhere, marching down from the crest of the hill, wearing a luminous lunar suit, green jacket. They gathered, stood together a little ill at ease, hesitating. In-joke group hug, Mel ordered. They joined in a circle, arms around each other's shoulders. But it didn't feel the same, Tash reflected sadly. It was kind of stagey. Going through the motions, too much distance between them, if not literally. Maybe they were growing too old for this. Or maybe it was just she's exoskeletal support getting in the way, she thought, suppressing a grin, feeling the rods and joints under his jacket. They broke the hug, rather awkwardly. Mel said, "Come on, let's get this darn hill done." They climbed on. She walking back the way he had come between Mel and Tash. Tash could hear that mechanical whir as he stepped. I didn't mean to jump out on you. He held up his phone. The signal strength is a little better up here, so I tracked you. And suddenly, there you were. What did you think of Elvis? Tash shrugged. I had heard of him. Recognised the music, part of the soundtrack of our lives, I suppose. More like our parents, Mel said. Even our grandparents. She said, my Jim was a big fan, you know. Of Elvis. Liked to dress up, though he couldn't sing a note. He could be surprisingly camp in some ways, for a deep space astronaut. Anyhow, there's a kind of competition going on concerning Elvis. All this is about anniversary days. You know about Elvis's, we heard. The original idea for today, 1957 day, came from the Russians. Did you know that? Who pointed out that this year is the 100th anniversary of Sputnik 1. The first space probe to reach Earth orbit. An anniversary of us, humanity, doing something magnificent. Even if it was all about the Cold War back then. There's a display somewhere. Let's all big up Russia for a day. Mel said. I suppose you could see it as another act of defiance against Galaxius. We did that. Maybe, but then other people starting digging up other anniversaries to tack on. Births of famous people, writers and such, I can see why. Tash nodded. In the middle of a bad time, look back to the good. Well, it felt like the right thing to me. To celebrate all we have done. How far we have come. Whatever that damn Galaxius does to us, we mustn't forget. Not ever. Tash thought that sounded like the authentic she. Not nostalgic. Angry. Anyhow, he said now. One of today's 100th anniversaries is the signing of the treaty that established the European Union, or its precursor organisation. Not the one that was re-established a few years back, whatever. It was a big deal in terms of international cooperation in its time, and their anthem was the Ode to Joy, Beethoven's 9th. So, right now, people are voting on their phones for preferences for music to be played later, big-scale stuff. First option. Either the Ode to Joy, the famous 2036 all-mech performance, or Elvis doing Always on My Mind. Mel hummed a phrase. I think I know that one. She said, well, cast your vote. It's just over the hill, by the way. What is? Tash asked. The slave market. You've been posting about that, Tash said. How you wanted to see that particularly. Your public posts on the Jones sites, I mean. I have been following you, Shi. So, how is Pioneer? Well enough. Test flight in September, they're saying now. October, maybe. That soon. Progress is smooth. I mean, it's mostly standard components, the Jones shelters, the secondary drive systems. It's just the dark energy propulsion system that's novel. But we're confident the theory will work out. I hope you're right, Mel murmured, since your ass will be on the line. She shrugged. If I'm fit and ready, of course the mission has to be crewed, whether by me or not. Humans have to go. It's a gesture for our kids, our generations anyhow. What kind of world we want them to grow up in? What kind of regime? You'll know more about this than I do, Tash. Our generation isn't having a lot of kids. Not even at the replacement level, globally. Even before the blink. Look at the three of us. You can see why. Our parents grew up somewhere around peak population, and we were born into a world where we felt like we were in the way, just another burden on a creaking planet. And I have a feeling we pass that on to the next generation. He looked away. Jim and I were planning to do something, sometime in the future. Maybe surrogacy, maybe an adoption. We wanted to be parents, I think. Mel and Tash exchanged a glance. Without a word, they grasped Shi's hand, one on each side, and they walked on until they crested the hill, where they paused, panting. They were overlooking another broad hollow in the Appalachian landscape, a shallow lake, a tent city on the far shore, festival-goers camping out. And in the foreground, before the lake, was a strange tableau. A kind of wooden stage on which stood rows of human beings, old, young, many ethnicities, all naked, shackles around their ankles. People were walking past this, staring, smiling uneasily, looking away. The actors kept their eyes downcast, Tash saw. Camera drones hovered overhead, but nobody was taking pictures. My God, Mel said. She nodded. The one thing I really wanted to see today. This is the 200th anniversary of the largest slave auction ever held in US history. They called it the Weeping Time. These people will stand here all day, without food or drink, whatever the weather, all day. Quietly magnificent, Tash said, moved. Mel grunted. I wonder if Galaxias is watching somehow, and if it understands. She glanced at her. Good thought. Look, you two. I know you think I've got myself lost in the project, the work. Tash eyed him. Well, haven't you? Not totally. He seemed to force a smile. I'm glad we decided to do this. Us. We ought to cherish each other more. If not today, when? From what I understand, it's believed that Galaxias is alone, right? A cohesive entity. Maybe even a single individual. Mel nodded. That's what Charlie has argued from the beginning. You'd need a tightly integrated culture, at least, to maintain your hold across a galaxy. So Galaxias has no friends, only potential enemies, like humanity, and that's its problem. Mel held them both back, and they clasped hands in a ring. Quite right. And we mustn't forget who we are. Right, Tash said. She grunted. Damn right. A ripple passed through the crowd. Suddenly everyone was watching their phones. Some started swarming over the crest of the neighbouring hills, heading back towards the centre of the new diaspora. She glanced at his own phone, scrolled quickly through it. The result of the plebiscite is in. Look at this. They all peered into his phone. Once again Tash was looking over the park at the centre of the new diaspora, the looming council hall behind it. And that tremendous statue suddenly stood up, swaying, smiling, 50 meters tall. Ha! She said. People are running and screaming. The Elvis monster comes to life. He put his arms around Mel and Tash. Take that, Beethoven! And over a lilting piano phrase, Elvis began to sing. As the words scrolled in the air before them, the in-jokes sang along. as did everybody in the landscape, as far as Tash could tell. But at that strange moment of togetherness, she had a stab of doubt. A doubt about whether, when this day was done, the in-jokes would ever stand together like this again.